Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
The American people don't know what's best for them. I do.
Only I could have executed such a masterpiece of electoral fraud.
I know exactly what they need. They're like little children.
And I have the records to prove it! Here, just look at these!
Teach them right from wrong. Tell them what to think and how to feel and what to want.
Each one a work of Machiavellian art!
They even need help writing their wildest dreams, crafting their worst fears.
You need me. Deep down inside, you secretly long for a cold-hearted Republican to lower taxes, brutalize criminals, and rule you like a king. That's why I did this. To protect you from yourselves.
Lucky for them, they have me.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 157 for the week of May 29th, 2017. I am Giant Talking Crow, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Disorderly Succession, Sarah D. Bunting.
You've got some inaugural balls on you.
Situation Roomie, Tara Ariano.
Stairs, forget it.
And sad-eyed VP Paramour, Roger Cormier.
So to Lincoln, that was actually his office.
Oh, folks, welcome back. As you may have guessed, we are talking about House of Cards this week with first-time guest Roger Cormier. Welcome, Roger.
Welcome.
Hi.
Yay!
House of Cards is back on Netflix as we record this, yesterday. It's the fifth season. Portents of doom abound. Before we start discussing what we've watched, how far has everyone gotten into the season?
We watched all of it.
I saw all of it.
Yep.
Okay. I'm sort of bringing up the rear at someone getting pushed down some stairs.
Oh, sure.
So I'm almost at the end. My feeling so far has been kind of the same as it always is, which is that this is the Domino's pizza of quote prestige viewing. I know it's disgusting. The ownership is politically problematic, and yet I can't resist eating an entire thin crust with onion and green pepper. And this season was no different. It got a little slow for me in that like interregnum between the election and the sort of parliamentary outcome, and I feel like it does that every season and needed to be 10 episodes and not 13. Did anyone else feel that it was a little slow in the middle there? Could have been shortened up episode-wise?
Roger, as our guest, why don't you start?
Yeah, I agree with that. I believe it was after the sixth episode was when the election was finally settled. And then, yeah. I mean, which was, we've been watching it for, what, 2-3 seasons now, I think, that's been going on with Frank and McNulty, a.k.a. I forgot his name now. Will Conway.
Yeah,
Conway.
Yeah.
RoboCop.
RoboCop, sure. Right. No, I always I could see that being 10 episodes, but they're not going to do that. It would show a sign of weakness after having 13 episodes of previous four seasons.
No stamina. Gotcha.
Right. Low energy. Really low energy. I don't know. I did like, though, it was all 13 episodes had was similar in that it was showing that Frank was kind of losing it. He wasn't in control as much as he at least seemed to be in years past. So in that aspect, it was consistent. I mean, you mentioned pushing Kathy DeRay down the stairs in episode 12 that showed that finally he was out of any clever ideas.
This season's just been murder after, like, they're not even trying, like, they're not even doing, like, the political pushout or anything anymore. It's just like, well, we'll just kill them, I guess. Like, I guess after the subway scene, you know, with Chloe Barnes, I guess just, like, that's the new normal, I guess, for the Underwoods. Pushing people, killing people, fucking them to death, you know, whatever works, I guess, now. But, like, is it a show about politics? Like, can we just, like, stop murdering people and just maybe once or twice, you know, just figure out a way to politically, you know, isolate them?
Well, this is kind of where this is kind of where I was at with it after episode 3, which I'd stopped watching to write up, and that should be available on the site at previously.tv as you're listening to this or in a few hours. But my sort of theory was like, haven't we hit sort of like max Underwood evil? Like, there's nothing else they can really do, and they're just repeating their greatest evil hits. So can we pull back from them and watch their underlings and what they do? Because I think the show is better sometimes at that processy stuff than it is at making these people whose evil is always at 11 interesting.
It seems like they're setting up the next season to be, well, I mean, there's two things for the next season, I suppose. One is Underwood versus Underwood, but the other one was like this setting the table for like an Underwood dynasty / dictatorship that they're going. That would be an interesting play if it's like the next season is how the Underwoods are undermined.
I felt like that was where they were going with the Patricia Clarkson and Campbell Scott characters that were sort of like sometimes in concert and sometimes at odds. And I also liked that it was the two of them because they used to date, which is kind of a cute off-screen detail. I mean, the actors did, not the characters, which I had to look up. I couldn't remember if they had broken up. They did. Patricia Clarkson as Jane Davis in particular was like for sure the breakout interesting character for me of this season. Like, what is her deal? She comes in as like a deputy assistant, something in the Commerce Department, but clearly shit's going on.
She arrived like from season 2 of Homeland.
Yeah.
Like that's a character from Homeland. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I definitely thought I as soon as she came on that this person is totally from some other show I don't watch, and but in a good way. I actually wrote down what she claimed her job is. She seems to like control the world, but she's Deputy Under Secretary of Commerce for International Trade.
Oh, sure, of course.
And no, it's just she makes jokes and she's not subtle at all sometimes, and it's even the House of Cards characters don't know what to do with her or how to react right away. It was so jarring, but I enjoyed it personally.
I thought that scene with her and Claire in the kitchen in the residence where Claire's finally like, what is your deal? And it almost seemed like she was about to say, oh, I'm in love with you. And there seems to be like a little bit of that aspect too, which is like, that's in keeping at least with the rest of the series, the weird like psychosexual energy of it. Speaking of which, Tom, as the person who's getting cucked by his already married girlfriend, like, most interesting storyline of the season or most interesting storyline of the series? Just kidding. Who cares? Get lost, Tom.
Well, yeah, he's apparently this huge ladies' man.
Yeah.
So it was, which awesome. I don't understand entirely at all, really.
Yeah.
You know, I wish he had been playing it all along as the same way that actor played his character on Boardwalk Empire, with like the creepy giggling. Mm-hmm. That would have at least made it a little interesting.
Yeah.
For me, but it's like, oh, crappy writer sucked into the Underwood's web and then, you know, spat out, partially digested. Like, again, seen it.
Yeah.
Boo.
Now, you know, up to this, like the running joke about, you know, House of Cards this season was they can never top what's actually going on, you know, in reality with the Trump administration. And, you know, it's been said so many times now that you almost don't want to bring it up, but it's true. Like everything that was happening in this season, it was like, yeah, okay. But one, this would have been like a 50-minute news cycle piece in today's reality. Like, so many things happen so fast. So many scandals have come and gone unanswered just because of sheer volume over the past few months. In our reality, yes. That when a formerly king of bonkers TV show comes into this, you know, reality, that it just pales in comparison. Like, sure, we're not getting video footage of Trump peeing on people and his underlings killing everybody a la Underwood. But still, reality seems much more of an crazy script than House of Cards does. And it really does sort of hurt the branding of House of Cards as like sort of the bonkers political scene, you know, drama.
This was never more obvious to me than when they the hot mic scandal disaster for Conway is like, he was mean to a pilot. Like, this would be a 4-hour story in Trump's America. Like, the fact that this is treated as if it could like derail his entire public life is adorable.
Well, and I think he was supposed to be some Trump-esque figure because the VP was being set up as the decision maker, and then Conway couldn't be controlled, but that was a little bit disappointing to me because I thought they had, despite like whatever, implying that he hadn't done this rescue, which was a lift from brothers and sisters, like, guys, do better at stealing. But also like that he was kind of starting to crack under the strain, and that there was this like PTSD implication happening, and that he couldn't handle the scrutiny. I thought that could have been interesting, but they sort of didn't let that play out because he is not an Underwood. So because he's their rival, he has to be destroyed. And I was like, I'd sort of rather watch what's going on with this guy, because we know he's going to be, you know, caught in the Underwood toe eventually. But I thought it was way more interesting, like, well, all right, this is kind of, it's not the same as Trump, but at the same time, it kind of is. And it's like, what happens if you're the presumptive, like, you're the presumptive president, and then you start right at the end kind of fraying in this dangerous way? But they didn't really go into it. And then he's been off screen. I mean, does he come back at the end?
No.
Do we see him again?
Nope.
No, that's too bad.
He went back to his home planet.
Yeah, I thought it was a little too convenient that that recording was released and that swung the election for Frank. I think, like, was it implied or was it said that Campbell Scott leaked it?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was the guy who gave it to the other guy at the retreat. I mean, that was my impression, because he said when they tell him about it, he's like, "Yeah, I know, I was there." I assume that he recorded it.
Right, and they needed that guy to at least pretend to be super drunk to just be standing there while Frank's waiting for his Uber or something. I guess.
That was a little weird. Uber.
I missed Remy and Jackie, which I didn't realize would happen. Like, I know the actor who plays Remy like moved on from the series and he wasn't going to be there, but they seem like the most human characters, and I was invested in their relationship, and then they just didn't appear at all. And their names were mentioned in episode 10, I think.
They're mentioned a bunch. They're like from pretty early in this season, because they're supposed to be part of that probe into all of his shit that he tries to derail into the war committee, war on.
Oh, okay.
But that's like the problem with the show is they raise the stakes of the show. They increasingly lose, you know, the players of low power, right? So, you know, the more important, you know, the bigger the issues, the less need there is for the undersecretary of blah, 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 and how they ice them out and how that improves them. And now we're at the point now where the only people they're dealing with is like, you know, the president of Russia and, you know, all this sort of stuff. So like the fact that like Jackie and Remy are no longer in the show kind of speaks to that kind of trend where you always, you know, it's like Batman Returns has to have two villains and the next one 12. You know, like it's at a certain point, you have to give yourself permission to sort of not have to like exponentially raise the stakes all the time, because you lose something of yourself, you know? Like,
but that's the whole thing of bonkers TV. That
I know.
You can't. You have to keep propelling forward.
But I'm saying
ever greater circles of bonkers.
And we're all saying the same thing, is that we miss some of these details. But I mean, that's the rub, right? For a show like this, is that, you know, you can't raise the stakes and have everything going on at the same time. You just lose sort of the smaller, you know, niceties of the show.
Right.
And then you have a sentence I'm about to say, my college education and I, hi dad, thanks for everything. The president and his personal trainer / reenactor boyfriend getting in a fight while riding bikes.
Whom amongst us has not, right?
Anyway. If I had a nickel, I'd have a nickel.
Random, while we're just into like, you know, random thoughts. Surveillance in the White House plays a big role this season, like cameras and like not only in the White House, but just like the whole
around,
you know, echelon computer system that knows all, sees it, all, the eagle eye and all that kind of stuff.
And Leanne's car also.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Because like basically anything with a camera or a microphone is now at the president's disposal. And he has like, I'm going to guess, something with a really great UI UX if he can just like drill right down into their dashboard camera or whatever's going on. But like, first of all, where was that all the other times this would have been helpful to anybody in the show? Like, it's just like magic new technology, yeah, I guess. But yeah, it's just like when you bring a that capability is like this show's time travel, or this show's, you know, shapeshifter. It's like once you give somebody that power, you have to come up with a really good excuse why they can't use it again to make their lives much easier for whatever you're thinking about the next season, right? Because now whatever happens in next season, I'll be like, well, you could have figured that out if he just dialed into her camera and saw
like
whatever.
Why are the Wonder Twins taking the form of a bucket of water again? That's not helpful.
Anyways,
exactly. But I guess next season, Frank, if there is a next season, I assume there will be. I know it hasn't been announced, but I'm sure it makes money. So, but I would imagine Frank would still have cameras in the White House, and that's how he would find his way back or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's convenient in that way.
And Tara, what do you think about Frank Underwood not liking living in hotel rooms all the time? What's your thoughts on this?
He's a fucking idiot. I mean, honestly, after you live in the White House, I assume every other place is worse. I mean, the screening room scene alone was like, oh, that looks like heaven. And then it's like the second they've left, the butler comes in to like clear out their stuff. Like, this is probably what it's like for my parents at their house. That's why they're such pigs whenever they're anywhere else. They have people that work for them who live there and clean up after them. Hi, Dad. but yeah, that was a cute line.
Yeah, I think going back to the start, Sarah, you're right. This is Domino's Pizza, but it's also like Domino's Pizza in the era of like Domino's Pizza now, you know, has making 3D pizzas and pizza orbs and stuff. Like, it's just, it's reality is caught up to House of Cards. And I wonder how much of the reality that was setting in went into the writing of this season versus what's going to happen next year. Like, are they going to respond to the fact that Trump has outpaced Underwood next year if they do another season?
Yeah. And I also wonder if the decision to do another season, like if we lived in a normal world, it would be a no-brainer, because they could just keep like shoveling coal into the plot engine maw and, you know, until everyone's dead. They could conceivably keep going for another few seasons, but I wonder if they're not like, well, there's kind of nothing we can do until the real life bonkers drama plays out. Yeah. So maybe we should just stop. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it though. I enjoyed season 5.
I also liked it more than I thought I would. I was just going to bring up Veep because cause Veep is still entertaining, but I guess they're a comedy on purpose. So I guess that doesn't, it's not a good comparison. But I thought when watching Veep, either last season or this season in the era of Trump, wouldn't be as interesting, or I would just constantly think about the real world, but that didn't really happen. I did end up getting absorbed in their universe.
Yeah, so. I agree with that on both counts. I think it's smart of the writers not to try to do. I mean, I think Scandal does this more, from what I can tell from the outside. I don't watch it anymore, but that they try to do more direct parallels to things that are going on in the real world. Whereas here and in Veep, you don't see anything about like someone tweeted something stupid. Like, you know, that doesn't. It's mm-hmm. there's not that direct reference to stuff that we're experiencing / wish to escape from.
What if somehow Netflix and Kevin Spacey could engineer a South Park reaction time to House of Cards, where every week you're gonna kind of blow it out in 10 days from start to finish, and it's gonna be like a total analog to what's going on? That would be kind of amazing. Or just like a show in general. Like, it doesn't have to be House of Cards, but if like it was that level of a show. And
well, that's kind of what the President Show is, I think. That Comedy Central show.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll shut me up. All right. last thoughts before we move on?
Tara, I feel that you felt some ways about some decorative elements of Claire's costuming this season.
Oh yeah. I tweeted this before the season started, but so many extraneous buttons not actually doing anything. She's always looked so good prior to the season. I mean, you said that you didn't have a problem with decorative buttons in theory, but what did you think when you actually saw her costuming this year?
There were a couple of rows of decorative boob tins that I didn't understand at all. And the like longer hair, not for me.
I like
at all
hair better too.
Don't like it.
Not enough to make me stop watching if there is a sixth season, which I assume there will be in the fullness of time.
So you can check out our Swarm coverage on previously.tv.
Much of it supplied by our very own Roger Cormier.
Yes, thank you, Roger.
Oh, that's me.
He doesn't like you, he's grumpy as can be. He doesn't like fun, that's plain to see. Time to ask, will Dave hate this?
Probably.
So today's Will Dave Hate This is...
Been a while.
It has been a while. Is about a show called Blue Book that is coming to the History Channel. Let me read from the Deadline report. 10 episodes straight to series order from A&E Studios and Campari Entertainment, a division of Robert Zemeckis' Image Movers. Created and written on spec by David O'Leary, Blue Book marks the network's fourth original scripted series overall, and chronicles the true top secret U.S. Air Force sponsored investigations into UFO-related phenomena in the 1950s and 60s known as Project Blue Book. Follows Dr. J. Allen Hynek, a brilliant college professor recruited by the U.S. Air Force to spearhead this clandestine operation that researched thousands of cases, many of which were never solved, and each episode will draw from the actual files, blending UFO theories with authentic historical events from one of the most mysterious eras in United States histories. I don't know what that means. But anyway, I'm going to say Dave will hate this on the following criteria. One, it's a scripted show on history, and he has never engaged with any of those, I believe.
Incorrect, but go on.
What is?
Vikings?
Oh, Vikings, duh. All right, forget that one then.
But that is the exception that proves the rule.
Yes. Yes. Robert Zemeckis has not done anything that Dave has been interested in quite some time.
Still waiting for that Polar Express sequel.
Well, that's the thing. My other worry about it is that it's going to lean too heavily on weird special effects, which Robert Zemeckis is known for, even in movies that otherwise like would not seem to demand it. Like, I mean, this wasn't weird, but like Flight leaned heavily on special effect mumbo jumbo that I think is more of interest to him as a creator than, you know, the artistic actual content of what he does, Polar Express being another excellent example of that. But Sarah, you think he will not hate this. Tell us why.
I am not like way over on the like way. I'm just sort of like cautiously saying that Dave will not hate this because he does not hate Vikings, because this has the potential to be a cool period drama a la Manhattan that might appeal to him on a nifty old tech props level and could do some of the things that X-Files, timely reference, did well and maybe not do some of the things that it didn't do well. I think a lot depends on the casting, and he may not adore it, but I think Dave will not hate it. I Don't like the title, though. It sounds like it's about exams. Like,
or buying a car.
All right. Before Dave tells us how he feels, Roger, what do you think he's going to say?
I also don't think he'll hate it. That's all. It's just a feeling. I don't really know Dave as well as you two.
I don't particularly think he's going to hate it either, but Sarah already picked that he would. So I had to come up with some
first
rationale.
First come, first serve.
Okay, go ahead, Dave.
Like debate club, you got to argue it whether you want to or not.
Yep.
No, I am ready for this show. And I'll tell you, and I think Sarah nailed it. First of all, it could be like Manhattan Mad Men meets X-Files. And now that X-Files is just files, you know, now that they de-alienized X-Files, why not have a show about aliens? I'm ready to have a show about aliens. I love alien shows. I watch Ancient Aliens, guys. It is the dumbest show on TV, and I do not miss an episode. I've seen every episode multiple times. I love that show. How come this isn't a podcast about Ancient Aliens? Why am I not doing that?
Ancient alien experts say, we don't know.
There's no casting yet, right? We're not there yet.
I didn't see anything
about that.
The other reason that Dave will not hate this is that the story on Deadline was like they had to put some kind of picture in it, and it was a picture of cigarette smoking man who's like Dave's favorite guy from the X-Files.
Yeah, I always said that should be a spinoff show. It's just him and his cronies in the office deciding the world's fate, you know, like that one scene, like, as long as I live, the Buffalo Bills will never win a Super Bowl. Like, it's that, but it's the series. This sounds like it's in my wheelhouse. Vikings is a really good show. I know it's on History, so nobody really gives it a chance, but it is actually very well done. The production values are great. So if it's more on that side of things than, say, Axemen or all the other shows, I assume that's, you know, cost $3 to make so they can, you know, spend a pretty penny on shows like Vikings and hopefully Blue Book, I'm totally gonna check it out. So the determination at this point, as far as I can see it at this moment in time, is that Dave will not hate this. So congratulations, Sarah.
Yep.
Tara, I can't believe I'm married to you. And now a word from our sponsor.
Hey there, Extra Hot Great listeners. I'm Kat Angus.
And I'm Jocelyn Getty.
And together we host I Hate It But I Love It, the podcast about all the pop culture you love and hate simultaneously.
In every episode, we take a movie or a TV show that brings us feelings of deep love and intense hatred.
At the same time.
And then just try to pull apart why it makes us feel that way.
Even if we're not entirely sure.
And sometimes we're not.
We have many complicated feelings about TV shows such as Smash, Gilmore Girls, and The OA.
Oh, God, The OA.
Right?
And then we also discuss movies like Cloverfield, Love Actually, and Signs.
And a lot of others. To listen to I Hate It But I Love It, and frankly, we really think you should.
It's in your best interest.
You can go to hatelovepodcast.com or subscribe on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts, I guess.
Yeah, we're basically just two cool pals hanging out wherever podcasts are found.
All the coolest pals. hatelovepodcast.com. You're gonna hate it and love it.
But I mean, like, you're going to mostly love it.
God, I hope mostly love it. We paid money for this ad.
Yeah, we have a lot riding on this.
Oh, please listen.
That is, if you're lazy like me, I will put the URL in the show notes so you can just get to it right from your podcast app. But
excellent.
Yeah, she's a longtime contributor to the show. So I bet that podcast will be great.
Yeah, Kat is a fan of us from way back. So I'll also throw her a Twitter shout out. Follow her at Kat Angus, KATANGUS.
All right. It is time to go around the dial. Everybody's going to bring something to the table about TV they're watching currently. Tara, what do you got?
Briefly, I just want to mention...
You know, you always say that and then it goes five minutes.
Yeah, whatever. This is Drag Race has been on a real tear of great episodes of late. 2 weeks ago, as we record this, it was the shocking elimination of Valentina because she would not take off her mask during the lip sync. It's a lip sync. Got to see your mouth. But last week, the most recent episode as we record this was the straight guy drag makeover episode, which is an excellent one always every season. But this one was especially awesome because all of the straight guys who got drag makeovers were men who work on the Drag Race crew, and they were delightful. And it was so great to see how excited the queens were to get to do this with guys like that they've been working with at this point for weeks and weeks and that they, you know, like and respect and have, you know, loving feelings for in a very, you know, platonic family kind of way. They were super cute. So check out that episode. I'm sure it will be rerunning at some point this week. I think on Logo, I think shows on Thursdays.
That's just over a minute. Well done.
Okay. And longer, The Americans, as we record this, will, or as you're listening to this, the finale will have just aired. What a saggy mess of a season. Dave, back me up.
Nothing happened.
This is why you don't renew shows for two seasons at a time. Because if you're used to writing 13 episodes worth of show and then you suddenly have 23 episodes to fill, everything just expands out into the available space. And so much stuff was brought up this season that had no resolution at all. The fucking season finale did not even take us back to Russia at all. So all of that business with Oleg and his mother in the prison camp and like the investigation into him by the KGB.
And the son that gets all the way to America just to go back.
The same episode. Yeah. He comes back right to where, before the end, and then it's like he's gone too. He's not in the finale at all. Yeah. So for the whole season to be building toward, we got to go back from Russia. Just kidding. Now we're not going to. Like, don't. Don't do that. Don't do that to your viewers. It feels like a waste of time. Like we've been totally jerked around.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, you agree with me?
Yeah. The season, you know, it had its little, like, you know, the wheat storyline and stuff like that. But like in the grand scheme of pushing forward the story of The Americans, it didn't do anything. And I think it speaks exactly what you said. It's like, you know, are you writing a season or you're writing, you know, you're writing, you know, like a double long season and you're just padding it out. And that's what it seemed like.
Yeah.
Like the show's well put together. And I got to say, some of the best, at least for me, music choices, you
yes,
know, for, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's still, you know, it's a well produced show, but dang, do something, show.
Well, this whole thing with like as if they were going to bring up the possibility of sending Henry to boarding school when the whole reason that happened is that he was off screen while he was like growing 5 feet since the last time we fucking saw him, yeah. Which is like, this is why you don't put actors of this age on your show. Duh. If this time between seasons
Walt.
Is only going to be like 5 minutes in the time of the like the show's timeline.
You've been Walterized.
Yeah, but yes, exactly. Like, there was no way when they were like, and now we're going to move to Russia. Like, no, you're not. You came up with this great workaround to get rid of this kid so we didn't have to see him turning into Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm just saying, he's
Henry
huge.
Henry, do math.
He's huge. When he came back, he was, like, right. Towering over the fridge. He was, like, so much taller than the last time we saw
him.
Hi,
Mom.
Anyway, I have to see out the last 10
well,
episodes
I kind
of want to
watch it.
So
what are you doing in the garage all the time, Mom?
Whatever. Season 6 will be back forever. Next year. I have to see how it comes out, but I was very annoyed at how much they wasted my time. This season I really felt like they had jerked me around a lot.
I think that's fair.
And for my plugs, just mention the other fine podcasts on our podcast network, including our newest two additions, Wine with an H and Roses, the Bachelorette podcast by Stephanie Green and Jeff Drake, who are both past guests of this podcast. Logs, Coffee, and Bob, the Dan Rogge Twin Peaks podcast.
So good.
So funny. It's ridiculous. I was listening to all four of them that have dropped so far this morning, and it was a lot of fun. Bride and Doom, the podcast that I do on Married at First Sight with Brian Rubenstein, and of course, The Blotter Presents with our own Sarah D. Bunting, which is off this week, but I was on the last one. We were talking about The Keepers. Little House on the podcast, the Kim Reed Little House podcast. Is that everything?
Yeah.
And coming soon, Go Pirates. Woo!
Yeah. And also, I will say that I'm currently organizing the Derby donation drive segment that was please review the Star Wars holiday special.
This has turned
into
a mini
series. I had to chop it up into like bite-sized pieces so that people like it's sort of like it's the mirror of the Monty Python's best joke in the world that kills people. It's like the worst show in the world that kills people. So you have to chop it up into like little parts. So Sarah D. Bunting, our very own, is taking the B. Arthur barkeeper part.
Sarah,
and other
God,
people,
God bless you.
Including other
I
guests of the show.
I am lucky to be alive after watching that.
So I'm organizing
Dave
that now. So look
fortunate.
For that. I believe probably June or July it should start hitting. So whoever suggested that, you're getting 7 episodes out of it. So congratulations. And I hate you. Moving on.
Moving on.
All right, Roger, what do you got?
Twin Peaks. Uh-huh. You just mentioned it, Dave. I heard the episode last week and you wanted to talk about it. I'm sorry.
No, please do. This is good. This is good.
I'm really enjoying it because, most shows these days that are hour long, they're beholden to this season long narrative. So there's not a lot of time for random shit. And the show is basically all about the random shit, like frame to frame. You don't know what's going to happen. And I really appreciate it. Is it a little slow? No, it's really slow sometimes. But I still really like it.
Now, can you correct me if I'm wrong? But I watched a man spray paint 5 shovels gold for about 3.5 minutes. Is that true? Did that happen?
That is correct.
Okay. So. All right. Now, what is it? See, so for me, the problem with Twin Peaks 2017 is that it doesn't actually seem to be about Twin Peaks. And the calculation that David Lynch and Mark Frost made, that the more interesting part of the original formula was Bob and the killing part, and not just the weird town that is Twin Peaks. Like, for me, that Twin Peaks is stuff that happens in Twin Peaks and the characters, and that the murder is the catalyst for all this weirdness, to be exposed to all this weirdness, is why I loved. And I was like a latecomer to Twin Peaks. I discovered it through this podcast, through a canon entry. Absolutely adored season one. I was kind of okay with season two. This one, it doesn't seem like the same show to me. Like, it's got some characters, but it doesn't have that sort of playfulness that the first one seemed to have. And they seem to be leaning much more. Like, it seems like late era David Lynch movie making rather than the Twin Peaks from, you know, the original run to me. And I'm having a lot of trouble getting into it, as a lot of people are. This show is decisive. Like, there are people that really like where it is and can deal with it, and there's people like me, I'm losing my, like, season episode 3, like I said on Twitter, am I watching a missed walkthrough video? Like, it seemed like it just went on and on and on. It's like, what the fuck, do something. Like, it makes Legion seem like totally normal to me now. Like, I feel like I can go back and watch Legion now that I've experienced Twin Peaks. But, like, are you a fan? Like, are you a David Lynch fan, Roger?
Sure. Not, I mean, I haven't seen all of his movies.
Okay, but you're not like a crazy David Lynch person, right? Because I think a lot of the feedback I've been getting have been from crazy David Lynch people, and I kind of wanted to get like a. But what do you like about it? Like, what are its characteristics that you're enjoying?
Defend yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that to your point, Dave, it is funny because from what I remember, from what I've read, that ABC made them solve the mystery of who killed Laura Palmer when Mark Frost and Lynch wanted to just explore the town some more. And then they were canceled soon after that anyway. So it is kind of weird that they're not focusing on the eccentricities of Twin Peaks. I understand that. But then again, there was 15 minutes of no dialogue in the third episode this year. And it was just visually stunning.
Yeah.
I can't think of a better, less hacky term for it. But and I saw Legion. I liked Legion. I'm not really a big Marvel DC person, but I liked Noah Wiley's work. And I think Alan Simmel brought it up where he said, David Lynch was probably watching Legion and thinking, oh, yeah, I could top that.
Yeah.
And he did. I just like the idea that I can't predict what's going to happen. And
well, that
was the
for
case
sure.
In the ABC series. And
yeah.
Keep in mind also, Roger is a Mets fan, so he's used to weird shit that goes on forever. Makes zero sense.
Sarah, you should say you're saying that as a Mets fan also.
Maybe I should try Twin Peaks. It's got to be less baffling then.
So for me, the difference, season. Like, remember in the, am I remembering this right? There was like in the first run of Twin Peaks, there was that really long, slowly paced bank scene with the Murray in the bank. Am I remembering that
That's in the finale, in the season finale.
Yeah.
Series finale.
That was one of my complaints about it, that I was like, why are we watching this dude shuffling back?
See, I remember having an argument. I was like,
get on with it.
I get, like, that seemed part and parcel with the characters that we're exploring. Like, okay, I get it if you don't. But for me, Twin Peaks 2017, it's just like that scene over and over again, regardless of who it's about. I don't even know which one it is. One of the Kyle MacLachlans goes through a casino and keeps on winning and keeps on saying hello as he spins a thing, as he sees like a little totem over which one to win on. And it goes on for 10 minutes and doesn't really serve. And there's scene and scene. Like, there's so many of these scenes where it just goes on and on. And it just, they take so much time that, like, I was saying, like, the benefit is like, this is the one show that you can actually not pay attention to because you're on Twitter on your phone or you're playing Star Wars Droids Match 3 game. What? And you can look up every 5 minutes and you're still in the same scene. You're like, okay, he's still running around. There's a lady with no eyes and they're going back and forth. Got it. Okay. So we'll see you back in 5 minutes. And I'm not missing anything.
Are you going to
keep
nuts? So Roger's on board. Are you going to keep watching?
No, I'm done. All right. I'm just going to listen to the Dan's podcast is very entertaining. But this is like in no way the Twin Peaks that I really fell in love with. This is like something else. That,
all right. Yeah. Do you want to hand this back to the person who segmented it?
I am sorry. I had thoughts.
Well, I mean, there's only one episode per week now. It was 2 episodes the first 2 weeks. Maybe that'll help. You're not investing 2 hours. You're investing 1 hour now.
Right.
Would that help, Dave?
Probably not. not unless they really speed things up. Like, I don't need it to be like rapid fire, boom, 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 boom. But like, there's a point in which I'm like, am I being made fun of? Is this David Lynch? What are you doing? Why are you doing this to me? So, you know, the great thing about TV nowadays is that if somebody comes back to me and says, you know, and this is one of the things I hate about TV these days, and even I say it a lot, but you really have to stick with it through X. I'm like, why? It was 4 hours, guys. After 4 hours, if you don't have me, I think I've earned the right to say, at the very minimum, if at the end of the season somebody says, wow, what they did in the back half was amazing, maybe I'll check it out. But like, time's short. So,
yeah. All right, Roger, if you're prepared to move on. Sorry that Dave just hijacked your segment yet again. For your plugs, we already mentioned that you're writing a bunch of House of Cards episodes for us, but you also have your own podcast. Is that not correct?
That is correct. Sarah teed it up perfectly. I think that it might have been on purpose. I do have a Mets podcast. I'll never know. There's no way to know. it's called Good Fundies. It's Fundies is short for fundamentals. It's a Keith Hernandez reference. It is not it's not related to the underwear, which we didn't know until after we named the podcast. Apparently it's short. That's short for fun underwear. And you wear, it's like you and your sexual partner wear it together. That's not the point. The point is, it's not about that. And, it's on iTunes and SoundCloud, and I'm starting it. Well, now it is. It's funny because somebody actually said, I started listening to it because I thought it was about the underwear, which I'll never understand. I'm starting a new podcast called Cormier's Corner. It's a play on Kiner's Corner. If you know what Kiner's Corner is, you'll appreciate it. I interview somebody about their fandom. Doesn't necessarily have to be about the Mets. So far, it is the people I've interviewed. And then I do a terrible Karina Longworth impression from You Must Remember This. And then I look back at, I do a deep dive on one of the players they mentioned. It hasn't premiered yet, but because it's a lot of hard work, which I didn't realize when I came up with the idea. But you could find it also on through Good Fundies.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm sorry I hijacked this topic. Sarah D. Bunting.
That's okay.
Join us, won't you? I'd like to talk about Animal Kingdom.
Oh, I got a lot of things to say about Animal Kingdom.
he doesn't.
I don't.
Shut up, Dave.
Okay.
It is back tonight as you're listening to this. It's just as good as it was when we left off last year. We got a couple of screeners. I watched them both. It's the same as it was, like, just super watchable. It's one of those shows that I like to let stack up on the DVR so that when one episode ended, I wouldn't have to be bummed out that I was at the end. It's such a good show at creating and maintaining this, like, steady tension as to who is on whose side in the family and who is trying to double cross whom. But it's also got the, like, good, hilarious, realistic bickering amongst the brothers, especially Darren and Craig. The way it's shot, you can practically smell the Venice Boardwalk and or Craig's BO. And it's really processy about heists. So if you tried it or didn't try it because you were like, TNT isn't good at this kind of thing, like, they're sort of not, except in this one case. And Ellen Barkin is amazing and should win all the Emmys for her portrayal of Smurf. I loved the movie. I love Jackie Weaver as Smurf in the movie. But this is its own thing, and it's really good. So my plug is for The Blotter Presents. Upcoming topics and guests include Kim Reed on this, like, Cosby, an American disaster, whatever it's called, on Investigation Discovery. Alex Collins, who's recently on Extra Hot Great, will be joining me to talk about that Menendez Brothers movie with Courtney Love as Kitty. And then after that, Eve Beatty will be returning for a Jonestown special event episode that makes it sound like it's really fun, and it's Jonestown, so it's, you know, it's not like a woo nonstop thrill ride. But yes, that's what's coming up this summer on The Blotter Presents, and we hope that you will tune in and subscribe and leave us a review on the podcast aggregator of your choice. We would love it.
All right, so I'm sad to report there have been no further tips on the seafood beer ad front. So we got clams, we got tuna, but we got nothing else so far. So, but, you know, hope springs eternal. Speaking of things that seem a little bit off, I want to talk about American Gods on Stars. I meant to talk about it before now, but here we are. Anybody else watching American Gods on the panel?
Nope.
Just me.
I am.
Oh, okay.
And me.
Okay. Talk over him as much as you can.
I was about to say, do you want to go on for like 10 minutes on your book? What are your thoughts so far, Roger? Have you read the book?
I have read the book. Yeah. I didn't see the most recent episode. Okay. I'm up to, I forgot her name, her whole episode when she comes back
Laura.
From the dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's another weird show, I suppose.
I am enjoying it. Like, I enjoy watching episode to episode, but it does seem a bit off from the source material in a way that was totally, I think, preventable. Like, because Gaiman's stuff is always sort of like this mix of, like, old myth, fairies in the garden kind of stuff, and, you know, a kind of a dry British sensibility, right? And that's sort of like, you know, what he brings to the table. And this show is sort of missing that wink, you know, that he brings to a lot of his stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, as Tara said, this show seems like it was made by the people that made Preacher, you know, the AMC show. And it really is. It's
right.
It's a little too serious about itself. And it's just missing that third ingredient where it's just, you know, nobody's winking at the camera. The only time it really feels true to the novel is when Mr. Wednesday is on screen. And, you know, he's such a boisterous, you know, bigger than life character that, and, you know, Ian McShane is fantastic in the role. That's when it feels like the Neil Gaiman story to me. And otherwise, it kind of feels a little off. Did you find that, Roger?
It's been years since I read the book, so I didn't, I've been reading, you know, some criticisms like that. I guess. I mean, is there a adaptation of a Neil Gaiman book that's been on TV that you've thought, like, nailed it, his voice?
No, I've avoided the Neverwhere thing because it just looked really cheesy. I've heard the radio stuff is really good. They did a radio adaptation of Neverwhere with like Cinnamon Toast and Crunch and et al. A few years ago. Like it was star stuff, but I haven't tracked that down yet. But otherwise, I don't think I've really been exposed to too much on TV. Like I've seen, you know, Caroline and stuff like that in the theaters, but that's sort of a different beast, Caroline. But that's sort of a different thing. But it just like it's good and it's well produced, and you know, McShane as Wednesday was great casting, and it's entertaining. And some of the stuff it gets spot on. The genie interlude, story aside, was pitch perfect. I thought like it's written like that in the book, and they did a really good job with that. But the rest of the main story seems a little bit off, a little bit too serious, and they're really seemed to be focusing way more on the wife in the series than I remember in the book too. She was sort of like incidental and just sort of like got some of the supernatural stuff moving after she dies, but there seemed to be pumping up her character and it's not really working for me there either. But you know, I'll watch it and it's good. I would give it like a B+, but like the book is A+. That's the only difference. So anyways,
That's fair.
Yeah. All right, moving on. I might have pressed the wrong button. So what?
It all began one fateful night 1,000 years ago.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You're 1,000 years old? Your bio says you're 27.
Lies! I change my identity and upgrade my appearance every few decades to avoid suspicion. I was all of history's great acting robots. Acting Unit 0.8. Thespomat. David Duchovny.
It's time for the No-Neck.
Oh, boy.
Erica is submitting The X-Files, Season 4, Episode 5, The Field Where I Died. Take it away, Erica.
Hello, Extra Hot Great. My name is Erica, and today I present The Field Where I Died, Season 4, Episode 5 of The X-Files, to submit to the No-Neck. In the words of eminent scholar Sarah D. Bunting, buckle up. Except don't bother, and while you're at it, you might as well put your arms and legs outside the vehicle, because this episode moves at the speed of continental drift. We begin with Mulder standing in a field, staring at some sepia-toned photographs as a leaden voiceover drops some Robert Browning poetry on us. After the credits, the ATF, as well as Mulder and Scully, are leading a raid on the Temple of the Seven Stars in Tennessee. They're looking for both the cult leader, a charisma-free wonko named Ephesian, played with laid-back raspiness by the late Michael Massey, and a reported cache of weapons. While not finding either of these, Mulder gets distracted by a door and goes outside, Scully on his heels, who tells him that their intelligence has searched the place and found no hidey holes. Mulder, however, takes a few steps and uncovers a trap door that's just right the hell there, completely unhidden, with voices issuing from it, and opens it to find Ephesian and some women holding cups full of fruit punch. Mulder knocks the cup out of the nearest woman's hands, she spits on him, and he and said woman, played by Kristen Cloak, exchange a significant look. Later, we're listening to a recording, on a reel-to-reel, of someone named Sydney giving the ATF information. Skinner says that, since there are no weapons to be found on the compound, they can't hold Ephesian or any of his wives, for more than 24 hours. Exposition is traded clunkily.
Agent Mulder, Agent Scully. You are assigned to this operation to investigate claims of Ephesian's paranormal abilities, channeling, astral projection.
We believe that Ephesian is a paranoid, charismatic sociopath. He is obsessed with the Book of Revelation and will use his knowledge of biblical texts to get anything that he wants from his followers.
Ephesian had 6 women on the verge of suicide. You witnessed it. My concern is that the temple members are released. Any subsequent federal investigation will ignite Ephesian's paranoia to such a degree that we won't have another Waco on our hands. We'll have Jonestown.
While questioning Ephesian's wife Melissa, a.k.a. Fruit Punch Lady, Scully asks her if she's ever witnessed any child abuse on the compound. This prompts Melissa to go from meek, downtrodden sister wife to... God, I don't even know what this is.
Melissa? No, I don't know nobody called that.
Sydney?
What is this? The McCarthy earrings? No, no, don't know anybody by that name, no. I saw a couple things. It could have been anything, right?
Gasp! Melissa is Sydney, the mystery caller. Sydney is basically a Catskills comedian having a stroke, tapping her forehead with her middle finger and squinting her eyes shut. Scully suggests this is dissociative identity disorder, which sounds pretty good to me, but Mulder goes if-fucking-mediately to saying that Sydney is a past life of Melissa's, and that maybe they can trigger Sydney to tell them where the guns are by taking Mela Sydney to the compound. So they do, where they meet two more personalities, Lily, a little girl, and Sarah, a southern-accented Civil War-era woman who monologues for a month... Really, even Mulder looks bored, before dropping a bomb on Mulder.
Inside, I could smell the smoke, hear the rifles, feel the bodies as they dropped onto the ground above. Every last one. 26th of November. 1863. I was here. As were you.
So Mulder figures out that this is why he's been having all these weird moments at the compound. He remembers them from a past life. With Melissa curled up in the footwell of Mulder's rental car... Okay. He and Scully discuss slash shout about hypnotic regression on Melissa.
Don't do this to her, Mulder. This poor woman's mind, her life, is in shreds. Just being married to a Ephesian indicates that she is susceptible to suggestion.
You were there, Scully. You saw it. You heard it. Why can't you feel it? How could I know about a bunker in a field where I've never been?
And why is it that Vernon Ephesian is reported by you a paranoid sociopath because he believes that he lived in Greece 100 years ago, and you're not, even though you believe you died in that field?
How could you have known about the bunker? You heard voices! And technically Scully's the one that found it, because she heard voices, you idiot. Anyway, hypnosis happens, and Sarah doesn't tell them what they need, so to Mulder, the next logical step is to have himself hypnotized, which happens with astonishing rapidity. He first remembers a past life from the Holocaust, and then things get kind of weird.
The Federals are gone. My sergeant is also dead. He is Scully. Sarah holds me.
She's sad. She's Melissa.
This scene goes on for fucking ever. He eventually reveals the Civil War persona that Sarah recognized, named Solomon Biddle, while Sarah's last name is Kavanaugh. Scully goes to, I guess, the backstory database, also known as the Hall of Records, and immediately finds a social register listing both of these as real people. She even looks for Kavanaugh in the K's instead of the C's like I would have done. Bonus points, she finds the photographs we saw at the top of the episode. Since the ATF can't find the weapons, they have to release Ephesian and Melissa, and while the episode itself has referenced Jonestown multiple times and even basically said out loud that the moment they get released, the cult's going to commit mass suicide, everyone seems surprised when some eavesdropping reveals a plan to commit mass suicide. As Ephesian blathers, an unintentionally hilarious shot shows someone pouring fruit punch into plastic cups, after which the camera pans to a cooler full of said punch, and then a giant jar labeled poison. Mulder charges into the fray just seconds too late and finds Melissa and like 50 other people dead. He is sad. We close the way we began, with Mulder in the field with the photographs, brimming with pathos. This episode is so dull, and it wants to have it both ways. It wants us to buy that Mulder, Scully, Samantha, even Cancer Man go back generations in their relationships, which leads to what I think is actually a sweet exchange.
Dana, have fun. Early in the 4 years we've been working together, an event occurred that suggested or somebody told you that we'd been friends together. In other lifetimes. Always. Wouldn't it have changed some of the ways we looked at one another?
Even if I knew for certain, I wouldn't change a day. Well, maybe that fluke man thing, I could have lived without that just fine.
Oh, X-Files, don't reference a good episode in the middle of your bad episode. But anyway, it also wants us to buy that Mulder has the same connection with Melissa slash Sarah, which, no, he doesn't. We've never seen her before. While Duchovny and Cloak commit to their scenes, they have little chemistry and no time to bond. It's sloppy storytelling across the board, way too rushed in some ways, and dragged the hell out in others. Some argue that the season 8 episode about the Indian guy who literally crawls up people's asses is worse. But I argue that, much like you need Dawson in a Dawson's Creek no-neck, you need Mulder for an X-Files no-neck. It's further disappointing because The Field Where I Died comes during season 4, well into the X-Files' heyday. Look at some of the other episodes in this season. Home, Unruhe, Small Potatoes, Leonard Betts. By contrast, The Field Where I Died is 44 minutes of Mulder not just jumping but pole vaulting to conclusions, often while making the duck face of sadness as Scully looks on in weary bemusement. And the less said about Sydney, the better. Final note, this episode was directed by Rob Bowman, who also directed no-neck resident Shades of Grey from Star Trek The Next Generation. And so, for your consideration to the no-neck, The Field Where I Died, of boredom.
Roger, you should go first, please. We should note, you log-lined this whole season, and if you can remember what your log-line was for this episode, please start there.
Jealous of a cult leader wife's various past lives, Mulder recounts his past as a Jewish woman under hypnosis. Oy vey, the Michigas on this one. Is what it was. I might have written that down beforehand. I didn't remember that. I did pick this one out of the user submissions. The listener submissions. Because I distinctly remember, because I rewatched the show a few years ago when I did longline it, that how bad this episode was. Like 7 or 8 episodes earlier was Jose Chung's From Outer Space.
Yeah.
Which was also it was another standalone non-mythology episode that questioned everything about one or both of the main characters of the series. And it was one of the best episodes, not just the show, but of TV ever, probably. And then that was at the end of season 3, and this was the 5th episode of season 4, and it was the exact opposite. It's funny because Jose Chung's From Outer Space was written by Darren Morgan, who's the brother of Glenn Morgan, who wrote this episode, The Field Where I Died, with James Wong. And I looked into the background of the episode that Glenn Morgan, Kristen Cloak, starred in the show Morgan and Wong wrote Space Above and Beyond. And then they wanted to showcase her talents because they said specifically she can do different voices. And Glenn Morgan fell in love with her while they were working together on Space Above and Beyond. And they also said they wanted to challenge David Duchovny's acting. I want to hear what you guys have.
Sarah, go ahead.
First of all, great presentation. I'm sorry that I watched this again. It's so boring. It's unfocused. It's self-indulgent. It's trying to be Emmy bait and really, really failing. It's a complete mess in terms of the world it's trying to build, as mentioned in the presentation. And multiple personality disorder performances on TV are always memorable and never in a good way. I'm thinking of Cynthia Nixon on SVU, the pigtails sitting on Maloney's lap. Like it just never, and especially when they take on the male persona, which is always some like blue collar D's and Do's type. Like it's never fucking Frasier Crane. It's always like, oh, hey, like what are we doing here? Literally, what are we doing here? If I had to long line this, I would be like, I would write a shitty college reimagining of the Spoon River anthology. And that's pretty much where I'm at with it. But some of the, I paused it a couple of times just to look at Duchovny practically herniating himself, trying to look sad. And it's glorious, but it's also horrible. Dave.
This episode is dull, but I don't really think it's no-knack worthy because that's like the real you know, nutshell, it's like, this episode's just boring. Like, there's no great character assassinations here. The subject matter is sort of par for the course for the X-Files. I wasn't going like, you know, wasn't doing like an animated episode or a claymation episode or something like that. The only really like no nacky part of this episode for me was the tragic acting of when Sydney was the dominant personality came out.
And he's talking like this, and he's got the two fingers up to his temple all the time. And this is, whenever he talks, he's got to put the fingers up there or the voice goes away. But then he puts the fingers back and he's all good.
That poor actress.
Southern accentry was not exactly a gift either.
Oh, yeah, yay. So, like, I was just bored by this episode, but, like, for me, a no-knack has to be particularly egregious, like, a crime against the show. And this one is sort of, like, forgettably dull, whereas, like, something like, I don't know, like, the fucking Burt Reynolds episode or something is, like, memorably stupid. So, for me, this one is, like, this is a great presentation. I agree with everything about this presentation except for the vote. I do not think it's a no-neck level disaster. Tara?
I agree with Dave, although the presentation was so good, that it's more notable in its badness because of, as Roger said, where it lands in the run of the series. More like, there are certainly way worse episodes than this, like, toward the end. But yeah, the worst thing, the worst crime it commits is depending on David Duchovny's ability to convey
acting
and emotion, because it's not his strength.
Oh, just even like the opening narration, like he's a guy like this.
He's so bad.
He's like, he could be reading soup, you know.
He just, but watching it, you do realize, like, man, he coasted for so long on how cute he was. Like, especially when you look at where Gillian Anderson's career is now compared to his, like, how much really interesting stuff she did after the X-Files, whereas he is just, like, whatever, writing his novels about baseball and stuff.
Aquarius!
But, right, Aquarius.
There it is.
That's true. The fact that I forgot
Gillian
it
was
says
on
it all.
American Gods a couple episodes.
Oh, yeah.
He was?
No, Gillian Anderson.
Oh,
she plays
was,
media.
Yeah, she was.
She's one of the new gods.
She's in it this week, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this episode. It's as Dave said, it's like, it's just kind of boring. It's not the worst. So that's where I land with this. But thank you for the presentation, which I
adored. It was really good. Yeah, that was great. All right, so let's put this to a vote. Sarah D. Bunting.
It's a no-nack for me just because of where it is in the series run. I get that there are worse episodes, but they weren't Duchovnisodes, so I'm voting yes.
Okay, Roger.
First, I just want to say I also love the presentation. I forgot to mention that. I'm also going to vote yes.
I'm going to vote no, but like, let's talk, because you should be contributing to this site. Yeah. I'm just going to say it.
I'm also voting no against this, and that means it's a tie, and that means, unfortunately, ties mean it's not inducted into the NONAC. That is The X-Files, Season 4, Episode 5, The Field Where I Died.
I'm sorry, but we can't put it into the NONAC. So says Sydney.
He's doing the finger thing, guys.
Bless her heart.
American love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it is time for a winner and a loser of the week. Tara, who's our winner?
Well, the numbers are out for the final ratings for the 2016-2017 season across all TV, and football is the winner, number one and two. But The Big Bang Theory is the top-rated non-football show of the year. The show, I think I know one person who watches it, which is my aforementioned dad. I don't know anyone else who does.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
What? That really, that he watches
that
it?
Your dad watches it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. So yeah, congratulations to them for being at the top of the shit heap of television ratings, I guess.
And loser of the week?
That would be The Mountain from Game of Thrones. The resident giant just missed winning the World's Strongest Man competition a few days ago, and apparently he's being kind of a sore loser about it. There was some like rep that he did that was like disqualified, and now he's kind of like sulking on Instagram about it. Not a good look.
Sad. Speaking of sad, Do you know what time it is?
Time to think of a segue?
It's game time.
Yay. Mountain time.
Oh, it's mountain time. God damn it. All right, everybody, this is the second game time of the season. Last week, Tara won. So this week, we are playing Bruce Valanche, Eat Your Heart Out, Nick Rhinewell Jones, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing.
Nick, host of Making the Sausage, the podcast I forgot. Subscribe to that one as well.
That's an oldie, but a goodie.
Yep.
Wasn't one of the new ones.
No, not one of the new ones.
So I have a note from Nick here. It says, "Hi, Dave. Confession time. As much as I enjoy writing for Previously TV and hosting Making the Sausage, my real dream is to have a lucrative career writing those snappy introductions for award show presenters. I have created a packet of spec intros, and I'd love to get your thoughts on them. Just promise me you'll keep this confidential because I don't want anyone else knowing my secret aspiration." There are exactly 45 of them split into three sections, plus an extra one at the end. And I know what you're thinking. I can already see the wheels turning in your head. Seriously, Dave, do not turn these into a game time. That would be humiliating, and I will never speak to you again.
Dave!
Guess what, guys? Each of these questions is an award show style introduction for a pair of actors or other TV personalities who are about to come out and present. I'll give you the first half of the introduction, and you give me the two actors. I also want you to use your best announcer voice and say, please welcome before their names. One point per correct answer, and there are no hints in this game.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
Nick notes, not all these people are still alive.
Okay. Good to know.
All right, let's throw it to Piggy to see our game order.
We will start with Tara.
All right, we'll go Tara, Sarah, Roger, all right?
Yes.
Are we ready to play Bruce Valanche, Eat Your Heart Out?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Round one.
Sure.
Such confidence. She was Veronica Mars, and she starred on Veronica's Closet. Remember? Announce her voice, and please welcome.
Okay, got it. Please welcome Kristen Bell and Kirstie Alley.
Correct. Sarah, he's the science guy, and he was Hawaii's favorite private eye.
Hawaii's favorite private eye. Oh, please welcome Bill Nye and Tom Selleck.
Woo!
Roger, he's Ray Donovan, and he was Ray Barone.
That's not my announcer voice.
But what if it was?
I can't
pull Ray Donovan.
Please welcome Liev Schreiber and Ray Romano.
Yes.
Yay!
All right, back to Tara.
Starting strong. Yes.
She was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and she was Buffy the Vampire Lair.
Please welcome Sarah Michelle Gellar or Gellar and Lisa Kudrow.
He played Oscar Bluth, and he played Oscar Madison.
Oh, God. Please welcome my mind totally emptying of names. Excuse me. Please welcome Jeffrey Tambor and that other guy who was the medical examiner.
Oh,
I will give you an extra hint. Two possible answers for the second half of this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit.
Please
welcome Matthew Perry.
Hey!
I'll take it.
She's Kimmy Schmidt, and he was Unreal's most eligible Brit.
Oh, shit.
Yes, they're getting tough. Just got tough.
Yeah.
Please welcome Ellie Kemper and some other guy person thing.
That's all that you should know about him, honestly.
What?
That was Tara, do you know?
Yeah, Freddie Stroma.
Freddie Stroma, correct. One played Krusty the Clown, the other played Homie the Clown.
Oh, shit. Please welcome Dan Castellaneta and Damon Wayans.
That was me from Cohen High. One of the Wayans is here.
Was that the right one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
Just doing that. He was B.A. Baracus, and he was D.A. McCoy.
Oh, wow. Just say, I wish we could be welcoming this pair in real life. Please welcome Mr. T and Sam Waterston.
He hosts Amazing Race, and he was all in the family's Amazing Racist.
That guy's alive?
Oh.
No.
They're not
alive. I think we should throw this question out. And I'm not just saying that because I don't know the first answer. Because Carol O'Connor is dead, I thought, right?
Yeah, I said not everyone is alive.
Not everyone's alive.
This is a theoretical afterlife slash.
Please welcome. I'm embarrassing myself. Yeah.
Well, he said Carol O'Connor, so.
All right. So the first half of that was our good friend Phil Cohagen give these people game shows.
Cohagen. But you get 1 point for Carol O'Connor.
No, you didn't get nothing.
It's
1 point or none.
See?
Oh,
yeah.
I've been scoring these wrong. Well, shit.
Wow, people don't listen to the rules.
I thought it was 2 points.
I heard that part. I just was confused.
1 point per correct answer. There are no hints in this game. Tisk, tisk, Tara.
Wait a minute.
1 point. You got to get the answer right to get a point, period.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. I did not say otherwise.
All right.
She's the millionaire matchmaker, and he's the current host of the match game.
Oh, shit. That's a tough one.
Why can't I remember her name?
Patty
Stangle.
And
Stanger.
Yeah.
And
Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin.
He played Commander Adama, and he was the anger translator for President Obama.
What? Anger translator for President Obama.
Yeah.
I don't know that. Edward James Olmos and someone else.
Mm-hmm. Someone you love. Keegan-Michael Key.
Correct.
Oh, my birthday mate. Sorry, buddy.
He hosts Wheel of Fortune, and she had TV's first abortion.
Jesus.
Please welcome Pat Sajak and Murphy Brown.
Pat Sajak and
was it BR?
BR,
yes.
Yeah. She decided to
answer everything with a question mark. Oh man.
And then somebody kind of like comes out of the curtains and looks around and just shuffles back.
And she every time decided, it's Robert Guillaume. Yeah.
She decided who was Spongeworthy, and he was the voice of SpongeBob.
Please welcome Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tom Kenny.
Correct. He was the original host of Talk Soup, and he was TV's original Superman.
Ooh. TV's original Superman?
Yeah.
Ooh. And I also forget who was first. Oh, yeah. But please welcome Greg Kinnear and someone else.
George Reeves. All right, bring us into our first score break. She hosted The Dish, and he played the commish. The Dish and the commish.
Yes, I heard that was not the problem.
You got to put your fingers up to your temple and think about it.
Dave's going to be doing this impression all week.
Please welcome someone who's had several past lives and Michael Chiklis.
2 Dave points, but Danielle Fischel?
Yeah, Dave points, cool.
Yeah, and she's from what?
All right.
Boy Meets World or something like that?
Yeah, she's from Boy Meets World.
Yeah. All right.
And Girl Meets
World. Yeah.
Score a break, please.
All right, well, I think this is correct, because I was scoring wrong for the first while, but Roger has 2 points, Sarah has 3 points, I have 4 points.
Okay. Very good. Roger, that means you're getting a chance to get 2 points right here in something we call the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. And this is how it works. I have in my hand a Trivial Pursuit TV category card from the mid-80s. There are 6 questions on it. If you get 3 right, you get 2 points. All right?
Roger is much younger than us, so good luck, Roger.
Here we go. Oh, well, thank goodness we haven't had one of these in a while. What Dynasty star met Queen Elizabeth in 1985? Dynasty star.
Oh.
No, I'm going to ask a question because you are young compared to us old timers.
Be Arthur.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do you know anybody from Dynasty? That was Joan Collins.
No, I don't think so.
Joan Collins.
Oh, okay.
Who starred in the TV special Color Me Barbara? And I can give you spelling on that if you want.
Who starred?
It's not Color Me Bad. Spoiler.
Who starred in the TV special Color Me Barbara? B-A-R-B-R-A.
Would that be Barbara Streisand?
Indeed it would. What sitcom's intro contains the line, they all had hair of gold, like their mother, the youngest one in curls?
Ow.
Do you like that reading? Did it? No hints on that reading. Cold.
Could you repeat the question?
Sitcom's intro line. Sorry, sitcom's intro contains the line, they all had hair of gold like their mother, the youngest one in curls. Everybody's screaming at their pod catchers.
Mm.
Do you want me to sing it?
Oh, boy.
I can sing it. They all had hair of gold like their mother.
Dave, the answer to that question is always yes.
The youngest one in curls. You may compliment me on my singing voice.
Great job.
Mm. That was true.
But you had a mystery there. That's the Brady Bunch. What show's theme in Vice?
I didn't realize. I thought that was the 70s. I realized it's not all 80s. Okay, sorry.
It's just, this was produced in the 80s.
Go on.
What show's theme invites, let's ride with that family down the street through the courtesy of Fred's 2 feet?
The Flintstones.
Woo!
What horse-loving girl has a brother, Donald, and a sister, Edwina?
Jesus.
What?
Yeah.
The McWhorst names?
Velvet Brown. Velvet Brown. All right. Oh, phew. Goodness, we haven't had a Dynasty-related question since the first question of this card. Which of the Colbys was overcome and almost killed by paint fumes?
I'm pretending paint fumes is a character's name.
We just need a first name and it's a man's name. So, you know, pick a man.
Pick a man.
Pick a man's name. First name.
Paint Senior.
Michael.
Jeff. Jeff Colby almost died via paint.
Oh, no.
Close, but no cigar. All right, back to the game. Round two.
Well, I feel silly.
Round two. According to Nick's notes, these intros are pretty first drafty, but he says the names go together really well.
Okay.
He was the dad on Growing Pains, and he's a pain in the ass who also played a reporter on news radio.
Please welcome Alan Thick and Andy Dick.
Correct. They rhyme. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
He played Jack the Castaway Surgeon, and she played Monica the Chef, who might have cooked sturgeon.
Oh, boy. Boo. And yet, yay! Please welcome Matthew Fox and Courtney Cox.
She's the star of Speechless, and she eats brains on iZombie, which may leave you speechless.
Please welcome Minnie Driver and someone whose last name rhymes with Driver.
Technically correct. That's Rose McIver.
Yeah, I don't know her name.
All right.
Of course.
19. She played a lawyer on the Dream Team, and he's a street magician who probably has weird dreams. He played a lawyer on the Dream Team, and he's a street magician who probably has weird dreams. Any idea on either part of
that rhyme? Oh, God. Why is this happening to me?
Nathan Lane and David Blaine.
I'm
stuck on Chris Angel. Nothing rhymes with
that. She was a Gilmore Girl, and he played a man-child named Phil Dunphy.
She was a Gilmore Girl. He played a man-child named Phil Dunphy. I can like recite his entire stupid Gain commercial from memory because it's on during It's on during Mets games. Why is it she left 6 weeks ago? I don't know the answer to this.
Anybody?
Alexis Bledel and Ty Burrell?
Correct. All right.
Ty Burrell's a Mets fan, by the way.
Oh,
no, he's been punished.
He's also on a Law and Order.
Yeah. There are three names in this one. She staked vampires on Buffy, and they staked their reputation on their ability to decipher magic tricks. She staked vampires on Buffy, and they staked...
Please welcome Sarah Michelle Gellar and Penn and Teller.
Hey!
Hey!
She was a doctor on Scrubs, and he was an L.A. homicide detective who put a lot of Scrubs behind bars.
Please welcome Sarah Chalk and Peter Falk.
She plays a crazy ex, and she hosts a competition show involving crazy textiles.
Oh, God. What is her first name? All right, we're just going to guess that we're welcoming Rachel Bloom and Heidi Klum.
Hey, good guess.
Correct. He created and hosted The Gong Show, and she stars on The Mom Show. No, wait, it's just called Mom. I'll come back to this one.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That Gong Show's a deep cut for...
For the youth.
For the
Right, I'm trying to work backwards.
Not really, he croaked recently.
That's true. He did.
There's also that Clooney movie about him.
That's true.
Another dead person.
Do you know the other half of it? Do you know the mom part of it?
Please welcome Chuck Barris and Anna Faris.
Yay!
Nicely done.
Nicely done indeed. Oof.
He hosted Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and he was the warden of a maximum security prison that a bunch of people escape from, which really makes him an ignoramus.
Who are please welcome Robin Leach and Michael Beach. I don't know the other half.
It's Couchtown's favorite spokesman, Stacey Keach.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God.
You're about to answer Jeopardy style there too.
I was.
She played a college student named Britta, and she helped overweight people get fitta.
Ugh. What?
Yeah. She played a college student named Britta, and she helped overweight people get fitta.
Fitta. Oh, God. I don't know.
Anybody?
Is it Gillian Jacob and Jillian Michaels?
Correct.
Oh, switching up the rhymes.
I see.
He was the greatest American hero, and he was Sterling Cooper's greatest Italian American art director. Oh boy.
Oh.
Oh my God! If you get this one, I'm giving you 100 star points.
All right.
Well, I know the second one. Or do I even know that one? I don't know. Someone in Brian Bat.
Yeah, it is someone in Brian Bat. All right. William Catt in Brian Bat.
That's what I couldn't remember.
Yeah. He hosted Unsolved Mysteries, and she tried to solve the mystery of young Clark Kent.
Oh, please welcome Robert Stack and Allison Mack.
Correct. She co-starred on Raising Hope, and she was hoping for a daytime Emmy for almost 2 decades before she won it.
Oh, God. What's the first part again, please?
She co-starred on Raising Hope.
Raising Hope. I can't think of anyone who rhymes with Lucci except Stanley Tucci. That's it.
He's a good actor, but he's not that good.
No, he isn't.
Anybody?
No.
Kate Micucci and Stanley.
Stanley Lucci.
Don't stand.
All right. Last question of round two. She taught ballet to the Bunheads, and he played the superintendent who made Jerry Seinfeld want to put a gun to his head. And their names don't rhyme, but you need both of them to play chess.
What?
Their names don't rhyme, but you need both of them to play chess.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I will accept last names on this
one. I'm more of a checkers man myself.
So. Oh yeah.
No.
Peace and peace.
just give me the, just buzz me out.
Anybody?
I got one. Kelly.
Wayne Knight and.
Yep. Kelly Bishop and Wayne Knight.
Oh,
all right.
Sure.
Score break, please.
Very close still. I have 7. Sarah has 5. Roger has 4.
All right, Roger. That means you're back in the Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge Zone. You know the drill.
Good luck.
What TV title character attends Grant Avenue Grammar School? This character's name is in the title of the TV show.
Ooh.
Is a well, that's TV
right.
title character.
Right.
Grant's.
Uh-huh.
Attends Grant Avenue Grammar School. Sounds like a student. Sounds like a student to me.
I'm going to take a guess. Punky Brewster.
Good guess. Beaver Cleaver. What Comedy Network featured a segment that ended, "May the good Lord take a liking to you and blow you up real soon"?
What?
I know.
Jesus.
Yeah, you just got to think about it.
What was the can you repeat the beginning?
What Comedy Network featured a segment that ended, "May the good Lord take a liking to you and blow you up real soon"?
Right.
A Comedy Network.
Yes. And I will give you this. It's not. This is the 80s. Comedy Network is a, mm-hmm. What comedy TV show? Let me. I'll tell you that. Don't think that works.
SCTV.
There. Hey!
What mode of transportation does Dr. Steve Kiley, K-I-L-E-Y, use to make house calls on Marcus Welby, M.D.? How does he get around, this Dr. Steve?
Well, I've never seen the show. I'm gonna say a hearse.
Motorcycle. Who did Mary Richards throw an ill-fated 48th birthday party for? Who did Mary Richards throw an ill-fated 48th birthday party for?
Oh, Rhoda?
Good guess. Lou Grant. I don't think Rhoda was that old in the show.
No.
Sure.
What law I'm professor's sorry. Office is guard? You can stop apologizing. What law professor's office is guarded by no not? What law professor's office is guarded by no nonsense secretary, Mrs. Nottingham?
Yes.
It's not the West Wing.
L.A. Law.
No, law professor's office. Professor Kingsfield. You know, Professor Kingsfield. No idea what that is. Whose mother does Zara Cully portray on The Jeffersons? George Jefferson. George Jefferson. All right, back to the game.
Okay.
Third and final round. Oh, geez. Nick says he accidentally deleted the introductions to these, and all he has are the names. So I'll give you the two actors, and you have to tell me what the snappy introduction would have been.
Oh, okay.
All right. And for this one, because they're kind of tough, I'm going to give everybody 2 points per right answer.
Okay.
Tara.
Yep.
Please welcome Ashley Benson and Reese Witherspoon.
She's a pretty little liar. She tells big little lies.
Yeah, that's really good. Correct. Please welcome Jessica Lange and Steve Harvey.
She's a star of Feud and he presides over Family Feud.
Woo! Correct. 2 points. Please welcome Bryan Cranston and Gerard McRaney?
Gerald McRaney.
Oh, Gerald McRaney. Oh, wow. Fuck that one up.
Jeez.
This one's a rhymey one.
Please welcome Malcolm's dad and Major Dad. I mean, yeah.
Malcolm in the Middle and Major Dad.
Close. And that's close enough.
Breaking Bad and Major Dad.
Oh.
Please welcome Soleil Moon Frye and Ashton Kutcher. Please welcome Soleil Moon Frye and Ashton Kutcher.
God. I don't know what the... She's Punky Brewster. He's stoned in the 70s. I have no idea what is
she it. She was Punky Brewster. He hosted Punked.
Ah, of course.
Please welcome Angela Lansbury and Kristen Ritter.
Kristen Ritter?
Yeah.
Okay.
With a K.
She was on Murder, She Wrote, and also advised you not to trust the bee in apartment 23?
One played Jessica Fletcher, the other played Jessica Jones. Please welcome Tina Fey and Bret Michaels.
Good luck with that, Bret Michaels.
Well, how many shows has he been in?
Yep.
Stymied. She
I'm
created in 30 Rock, and he starred on Rock of Love. Please welcome Michael Sheen and Aziz Ansari.
He's a master of sex. Or masters of sex. He's a master of none.
Please welcome Jennifer Gardner and Alicia Cuthbert. Good boy.
First of all, Jennifer Garner, not Gardner.
Oh, it's always Gardner. You know it.
Well, I'm helping Sarah.
And Alicia Cuthbert.
Alicia Cuthbert.
Yes.
I didn't think the R was.
Okay, well, that wasn't a TV show. So, what else was she on? Shit.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Her dad was Jack Bristow, and her dad was Jack Bauer.
Her dad was Jack Bauer.
Spy
damn
dad.
It.
Spy daddy question. Please welcome Sherilyn Fenn and Cillian Murphy.
Huh. Okay.
Oh.
Damn it. Why couldn't I have gotten
She had her leg thrown into fire by Joey Tribbiani in that one episode of Friends off camera and someone else.
Oh, man. Man, I mean, he wins on these answers, but doesn't win the actual. Yeah, there's true. Some side game that he's definitely
better than Benson.
She starred in Twin Peaks, and he stars on Peaky Blinders. Please welcome Jean Triplehorn and Julie Chen.
She's from Big Love, and she's from Big Brother.
Please welcome Frances Conroy and Greg German.
Or German.
German?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, two N's, either way.
Right.
Okay.
German, German.
Conroy, German. Oh, God. She's 6 feet under, and he's something else with a number.
Some guy.
And also that rhymed.
What's he from?
He was in Ally McBeal.
Okay, all right. She played Ruth Fisher, and he played Richard Fish.
Oh, God.
Fisher
oh,
and Fish.
Oh, Christ.
Really going obscure.
Damn it, Nick. Slash.
Please welcome Jason Isaacs and Susie Kurtz.
Wow. Ouch.
Worth two
I
points.
Know both those names, but that is not.
He starred on Brotherhood. She starred on Sisters. Please welcome Emma Roberts and Kevin James.
She's a scream queen, and he's from King of Queens.
Please welcome Bokeem Woodbine and Bob Denver.
What? Oh, Christ. Okay. Okay, Gilligan, Milligan, One is Milligan and one is Gilligan.
Yay! Nice.
And our last question.
Nice.
Please welcome Chrissy Teigen and Brooke Shields.
Would watch. Give them a show.
Why does one of them have to be Asian? Can they be good at their jobs?
They are two people who have never been in my kitchen.
Technically correct. The best kind of correct. That's lip sync battle and lipstick jungle. All right, let's get the final scores. Please start.
Roger has 4. Sarah has 9. I have 15.
All right, Tara wins, nice. But we have one shits and giggles question. Whoever shouts out the answer will get 10 Dave points. Please welcome Titus Welliver and David Beckham.
Bosh or ball?
No.
One is Bosh and one is married to Posh?
Precisely. Hey, 10 Dave points for you. Well done.
Wow.
Eat your heart out.
Watching
Bruce
Bosch finally
Valanche.
Pays off.
Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We debated the merits of the 5th season of House of Cards, then probed the question if Dave would hate the upcoming history show Blue Book, before going around the dial with stops at RuPaul's Drag Race, The Americans, Twin Peaks, Animal Kingdom, and American Gods. Mulder and Scully's adventure into Plath Wives was not quite terrible enough to make it into the Nonak. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
now to drink this fruit punch,
Sarah D. Bunting,
I wanted to believe,
and Roger Cormier.
Are you sure you should be in there, Goldilocks?
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
Well, I do owe you for giving me this unholy acting talent.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.